Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley and Yanis Janaeus. This episode, we'll be previewing the upcoming away match for Fulham against Blackburn Rovers. I look forward to going through this with my co-host. Looks like one of them is on the line with me. Mr. Hulley, how you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Goldman. And I'm sitting here. I've brought my cat with me, so I hope Yanis is going to bring his like he promised yesterday. Actually, I'm pinned down. The cat's on my lap, and my legs have gone to sleep. So, if I disappear halfway through the show, you know that he's got me anyway.
Okay. Well, Yanis is with us. I'm going to bring him on the line. Yanis, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hello.
Yanis, David wants to know if you have your cat because he has his cat.
Actually, I do have my cat, but we've got a bit of a problem because the cat is shedding at the moment, and if you've ever had a cat that's shedding, it's like it's dander all over the bloody place, and we think it's on the verge of going in heat as well. So things are not looking very good right now. Not good
okay,
at all.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Yanis. All right. Well, listen, I'm very happy you could join us on the show today. I don't know if we'll go the full 60. We'll see how things go. I have a couple topics for us before we preview the match, and I look forward to doing it with you, my friend.
Sounds wonderful.
Okay, well, let's get going. And, David, I'm going to start with you. I came up with a couple of topics for the Cottage Talk Roundtable. Let's start here. What are your thoughts on the potential injury for Lasse Vigen Christensen, and how much of a loss would he be if he's out for a long period of time?
Well, I kind of touched on this yesterday, and it might sound a bit callous, but it actually could actually be a bonus for us because, you know, as I said yesterday, it was a bit of a strange situation that potentially he was thinking of starting with LVC as a left wing back when Garbutt's much more suited to that role. And, you know, I don't think I've done a show with Yanis when we've talked about it, but I really don't see LVC in that position anyway, even when we play the 4-4-2 as a left midfielder. I think we did actually do a show with Yanis and that. We said we'd prefer to see them, LVC and Kaká that day on their normal sides, and you know it showed how much better we were having naturally wide players against the Ha-Ha's on Saturday, and that allowed more space for you know for Kearney and for O'Hara to do their stuff. So you know I'm in a way I'm pleased that if it means we're not going to see LVC playing left midfield because I don't think that's his position at all. Obviously I don't wish him to be injured or hurt or anything like that, but I don't feel that it's a big loss for us at this stage. Obviously, you know, if we were short on central midfielders and we needed him to play there, it's a different matter. But really, that's about the last position where we're short at the moment. We've got a plethora of people who can play there. So, sad for LVC, but not for Fulham, I think.
The one thing that went through my mind, David, and we haven't seen this player yet, and I'm curious if we might see him tomorrow against Blackburn, and that's Labyad. This could open up an opportunity for him, mattering on what formation Slavica decides to use. Are you looking forward to seeing what he can offer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no point bringing people to the club and not trying them. Obviously, we've seen his sort of show reel on YouTube, and he looks to be an exciting player. But I'm not sure whether Slavica at the moment wants to rely on him in a classic kind of midfield position where, you know, wide midfielders are expected to get back and help the defence because I don't think that's his game at all. I think, if anything, he's more of a, you know, a plan B option again, someone to bring on perhaps as a change, if you want to change things up. Maybe even as a kind of a, you know, if Kearney's having a bad game, maybe he could play in that kind of position in the hole because we know he can play there. Or, as I say, if he's going to change the formation around. But I think, in the main, Slavica wants to have the wide people at the moment that we've seen to be people who can defend, and we've seen that playing obviously inverted, you know, wingers, and also even with the wing backs, of course, both wing backs are primarily defensive players, I guess. So I'm not sure if he'll go, especially for a tough away trip up north, whether he's going to play him in that sort of position. Even if he does change things up, I think at best he's likely to come off the bench at the moment. And he's going to have to find it, you know, make himself, you know, into a situation where he has to play him, that he comes off the bench, does so well that there'll be calls for him to start again. But I just don't see where he's going to fit him in at the moment to start off with.
Okay, very good. So you think that he really needs to earn his way. And I understand that, David, and very good point by you coming off the bench. Maybe that's an opportunity for him because, like you talked about, we have several options in the midfield, and he is someone that could play in certain formations. So I'll be curious to see when we do see him. I don't know why, but I'm thinking we might see him tomorrow. Maybe we see him on the bench. Giannis, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on LVC. Again, no one wants to see a player injured. We hope that he's okay. But if he is out for an extended period of time, how much of a loss do you see it as?
Well, I'm torn on this one. I mean, the poor lad's had so much ill fortune. He had problems with the hammy last year. And he is still a young lad. And for him to go down the way he did on Saturday is unfortunate. I know that injury obviously opens up opportunities for players to come in, but happen to really like him as a player. He's obviously a good character, works very, very hard, and he's got a very, very bright future. So from that sense, I think it's disappointing. The one thing, the one intangible is what they will miss off the field. We don't really know what he's like in the change room, but I had a chance to chat with him pre-season at the Palace game, and he seems not only likable, but he seems like a quiet leader to me. So, I mean, that's something I think we can't even assess because we're not inside the changing room. The interesting thing about the lineup is that Ryan Tunnicliffe played tonight for the under-21s, and I'm not sure he's going to be available for tomorrow, but I think he's fairly close to coming back to a return. And that might throw a spanner in the works, so to speak, because he was playing really well before he got injured. So Slavish is going to have a couple of decisions to make there. In terms of LVC, the natural fit would be to bring Garbutt in like he was substituted on Saturday for the game at Ewood Park tomorrow night. That would seem to be the logical choice. I just hope that LVC's injury isn't as bad as I think it might be and that he's only gone for a little while.
No, listen, I agree with you. And the one thing, Giannis, that you always notice from him, and as he was getting more fit throughout the season, you could just see he was getting back to the player we saw last season at his best. His work rate is undeniable. His work rate is top-notch. They could be losing that kind of energy. That was the one thing that I was concerned about. What are your thoughts on what he brings just with his entire work rate?
I've always been a fan of him. I am. And credit for the club, the way that they've developed him. And we've got some good young players in the system that have the potential of having the same impact that LVC does. He's. I remember saying to him, as I said, pre-season, I said, you won't last any more than 2 years at this club because I think you're going to go on to bigger and better things, and I still think so. I know he's obviously got a wonky hamstring right now, but he's got, he's a player who's not... Every team has to have a meal. It's meat, potatoes, and gravy. And he's a meat and potatoes player. Wherever you put him, he works hard. And remember, he's still learning his trade. So I think he's a loss. I do. But again, I think we have a deep enough squad to compensate for that. As I said, Tunnicliffe coming back is going to be the right thing. And we've got players that can come in from the bench that can help out. But I just think that the way he's been playing, he represents a bright future for our club moving forward. If we're going to get promoted next year, he's going to be, a part of the core that we're going to need to take us forward. And I just hope that he's able to get better soon and come back in the lineup.
Okay, very good, Giannis. And while we're talking about the midfield, you mentioned Ryan Tunnicliffe. He played 59 minutes for the under-21s. We were talking about this briefly on the last show. Where does he fit in when he comes back? I'm curious your thoughts on this. What does Slavisa do with Tunnicliffe and the amount of midfielders we have right now?
It's a difficult one to assess because we know how he was playing with Kit when he got injured, and he was playing really well. And remember, he'd had a rotten start of the season. He got suspended for inappropriate comments, which left a bit of a sour taste in fans' mouths. But he came bouncing back, and this was the player that we thought we were going to sign in the first place. It's going to depend on Slavisa's assessment of him. If he sees as a coach what we see, then he has to be in the lineup. I don't think there's any question. And my natural thought would be he'd come in for Parker. But then again, knowing Slavisa and his penchant for changing formations, he could be anywhere. And that's the one thing that I like about the coach. He will decide to change formations at a whim. What we saw on Saturday may be completely different to what we see tomorrow night.
And I totally agree with that.
Coaches, yeah, I mean, it keeps opposing coaches guessing, and I never think that's a bad thing. I think he's good enough to be in the lineup, but that's a lot's going to depend on his assessment of the player and where he feels he can fit into a certain formation.
Okay, excellent. David, what are your thoughts about Tunnicliffe, where he fits in your mind? You know, again, I can't put you in the seat of Slavica, but how would you utilize Tunnicliffe with the midfielders we have?
Well, we assume, obviously, as I said yesterday, that he's gonna get back in because, of course, he's never played under Slavica, and he might be one of the frozen out people. I doubt it, but I'm sure he'll get a chance. But you know, the way that they set up against the Ha-Has, remember, you know, I was looking at today what O'Hara said, and basically Parker was there to sit and hold, and that allowed O'Hara and certainly Kearney to do a more forward attacking role. And as we've seen, when we were playing, especially a 4-4-2 with, you know, for most of the early part of the season, it was Tunnicliffe and O'Hara. And it actually was O'Hara tended to sit, and Tunnicliffe was the one who was going forward more. So, you know, that was, we wondered, that was a bit of a surprise, because we saw Tunnicliffe play the holding role really well last season, that game at Sunderland away in the Cup. So we thought Tunnicliffe might be that player. But, in fact, Tunnicliffe, I think, you know, he wants to be the box-to-box man. He is kind of the Steve Sidwell of the modern era, really. You know, he's that kind of guy. He's up and down the pitch, full of energy, you know, tackling, passing. You know, he wants to do a bit of it all, really. So the thing is there, then. So even if we play with three in midfield, he's not likely to be the holding one unless Slavica redefines his role. So if someone else is doing the holding, that means he takes the place of either O'Hara or Kearney on Saturday's performance. And both of those seem, you know, strange options. You'd think that would be, you know, a risky move in some ways because they both did so well. I mean, I don't think you can take Kearney out of the equation, certainly not. You know, perhaps you could alternate him with O'Hara, but I don't like alternating as such. Yes, I know players occasionally need a break, but just to alternate all the time, I think, is disruptive. I think people need to have a regular place and everything in the lineup. Sure, you can change things around, you know, for different games on a game-by-game basis, but not just for the sake of it. So, I don't know, it opens up a lot of, you know, questions, really, about if we're going to play, you know, a 4-4-2, there's only two midfield positions. Early in the season, that, as I say, that was tend to be Tunnicliffe and O'Hara, but that's when, obviously, before Parker got his fitness back, and we didn't have other people on the side, you know, sidelines like Ince, of course. Matilla seems to be a bit frozen out at the moment. Hyman, of course, has come back into the fray a little bit. So, lots of questions. This is why I say that at this minute, LVC isn't such a loss, because we have so many people there anyway, and we haven't even really seen LBC in playing in central midfield this year. He's had to fill in by playing either on the right or on the left just to get in the team. So very interesting to see what happens, and I think if we do play three in midfield, I think Tunnicliffe could do the holding role. I'm not sure if that's what he wants to do, but I think he could play that role as well. But we have Parker who can kind of do that, and we have Ince who can kind of do that. So, you know, there's no guaranteed places for anyone at the moment, really. So, you know, I don't think he's quite going to be there yet. He's played an hour today almost. Obviously, he's not going to be involved tomorrow because the team have already travelled. So, I would imagine they want him to get 90 minutes under his belt, perhaps, maybe in the reserves. Although we could see him, of course, on the bench on Saturday. But again, you know, we have a lot of players still, so it depends what his options are, who he wants to put in the starting lineup, and then, you know, how many people can he afford to put on the bench? We don't have unlimited places. So, you know, if you put someone on the bench, it's got to be someone that you're planning to use and not at the detriment of someone else who could be more useful, more game-changing. And I don't see Tunnicliffe as being a game-changer. I think he's, you know, he's a sort of player who you would have in the starting lineup, but he's not someone you'd bring off the bench necessarily, unless, of course, you're replacing someone for injury. Mm-hmm. But, you know, lots of questions to be asked, and it's going to see what happens over the next couple of weeks, how it all plays out.
It's very interesting, David, and there are two ways to look at this. One is what you were talking about. You want an established lineup, but isn't this also a good problem to have, David? Because I was talking to Giannis just a couple seconds ago about having options. So Visa has several options to play different styles, to play different ways, to match up against the opponent. But do you see this as a good problem, or are you concerned that we have all these options? Before I go to Giannis.
It is a bit of both, really, because I think if you know, you have to be very strong here as a coach, and if you start thinking, well, I need to start changing it around to, you know, because perhaps I need to rest some people or give other people a chance, it can be disruptive. I'm very much of the belief that you keep a settled lineup wherever possible. You know, under Roy Hodgson, we had a very settled lineup, a very, very settled lineup. You know, it was literally the same people every game, every week. You know, I know we have slightly more games in the championship, and you have to take that into account, but still, you know, Roy Hodgson, we were built on a very solid system and a solid team. And, you know, the gut feeling after what happened Saturday is, what do? You go out with the same lineup, don't you? The team that, you know, bar obviously LVC, you go out with a team that was there from 5 minutes onwards in the match. That would be obviously one way of looking at it. And on the other hand, you can say, well, this is going to be a tough game. The guys may be tired after Saturday. We've got another game on Saturday. You know, do I change a couple of people around? But that's when, you know, it's change for change's sake isn't necessarily good. It's a matter of you weighing up. And, you know, this day and age, we have all the stats. We have the science. And, of course, you can look at that. They can probably analyse by, I don't know, taking players' bloods or whatever they do these days to work out who's, you know, who's tired and who isn't, who's jaded. Whether the player says or not, I'm sure they have it down to a fine T. You know, they can do all these things. So perhaps there's a scientific way of looking at it and saying, okay, yeah, we need to rest this guy or we need to rest this guy. They're not at their peak. They need you know, more rest. But, you know, it's obviously good that you have strength in depth, of course. You don't want to be in a situation where you don't have strength in depth. But when you do have strength in depth, then it's, you know, how you use it, how you can keep everybody happy, how you can juggle all those balls and keep them in the air at once, and how you use it sensibly, not just, say, making changes because you feel you need to make changes. Making changes, you know, which will count. You know, change key positions, change for tactics. Good, but don't just change because you feel that someone else should get a go and, you know, someone else perhaps needs a rest just because you think they need a rest. Make sure you do it for the right reasons.
David, I'm completely there with you. That's why I find this topic we're discussing interesting, because there are so many different ways to go with this. And Giannis, I want to get your thoughts on the differences between having a subtle lineup we're talking about, because there are so many different midfielders for Slavisa to choose from. Are you with David that you would like a subtle lineup, or do you like having these different options to match up against the opponent, to play different ways against whoever you're going to be facing?
I think I'm in favor of the latter, but the reason is because Slavisa is still in the assessment phase. We're 6 points clear of the bottom, the relegation zone, and I don't believe there's really any chance we're going to get relegated. But I think this is a critical time for Slavisa because of the squad he has. He still has to make assessments in terms of not just getting results for the rest of the season, but he's looking towards the close season as well, because he's going to decide for himself the players he wants to keep an eye on the players he wants to bring in and the players he wants to let go. So while he's tinkering around with the formations and the players, I think he's going to take it from the angle that he's going to give everybody a chance. And I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. I think there's two ways of doing it. I mean, you can coach and say, look, we're going to put out our system and our lineup, and we're not going to worry about the opposition. And, you know, we're just going to focus on what we do best. Or we decide we're going to scout the opposition, and we're going to try and stop what they do. It seems to me that Slavisa is of the former philosophy, and that's fine. And if he does, and you know what, if you've got a big squad and you've got a lot of depth, I think it's good to change things up just because it keeps players on their toes. I think that a settled lineup sometimes can promote complacency. And with the depth that we have right now, nobody's place is safe. And I'm sure someone like Jazz Richards had probably no idea that he was going to be on the bench for Saturday's game against QPR. I mean, he didn't even come on. And I think that's good. I think you want to keep players on edge a little bit. If he's not happy with the way they're practicing or the way they're playing, they're not going to play. And I don't think that's a bad thing. So in terms of that, the settled lineup, I think while he's still trying to assess the players and looking forward, I think it's a good thing. At least it gives all the players a chance to show what they can do.
Okay, very good. And that's actually a good way to look at it, that he is still assessing what he has and what he doesn't have. And so he still needs some time to figure that out. So I see where you're going on that, Giannis. All right, guys, let's move to the second subject in the Cottage Talk Roundtable. And, David, I'll start with you. Do you think Fernando Amorebieta's aggressive defensive style was needed with the defense since returning to the club?
Well, this has been a real surprise in the last few weeks, I think. We've seen him come back out of nowhere, out of the wilderness, straight back into the team. And he's put in two really good performances. And he has been aggressive in those games. Thankfully, not so aggressive that he's made rash mistakes and given away stupid cards. Though he has given away a couple of free kicks, of course, and we saw, you know, obviously the hospital ball that put Dan Byrne in trouble. But in the main, no, I've been very happy with him. I think we have seen, you know, he has added something that we didn't have to defence before. I think the style has been spot on the last two games so far.
Okay, very good. Very good there, David. Giannis, over to you.
I think, this has been a really pleasant surprise, but you remember we had a few months of the, you know, husband came in, did a pretty good job, Amorebieta went up to the northeast. And my figuring here is that Slovacia's called him back and said, look, I know what you can do. I know what kind of player you are. I know you can contribute. Just play your game. Play your normal game, but just try and temper it a little bit. You're going to make mistakes. You can be erratic. Sometimes you can be a head case, but you're the sort of player I need. And come in and show your leadership, show what we've been missing as a club, and go out and play and don't feel any pressure. That's the way it looks like he's playing. I think it was a bold move. But players don't become bad overnight. He's not an international player with as many caps as he has for no reason. It was a brave move by Slavica, and he's played well. And remember, you asked me yesterday about, you know, would I change anything about what he does? No, absolutely not. It's the way he plays. And yes, he's going to give away the odd stupid free kick. Yes, he's going to get the odd card. You know, I said yesterday about the City of Manchester a couple of years ago when he had an absolute mare. But that's what you get with him. You know, and we have to accept it for what he is. When he's on his game, he's a very good player. And I like the way he's been playing so far. He's going to play tomorrow. And as long as he's comfortable with Dan Byrne at the back, it's a potent back two in the middle. We already know now that we're beginning to dominate aerial battles. So it's all good news. And I like coaches that show faith in players, even though others don't. And he'll say, you know what, people think you're this and that. Shut them up. You know, shove it where the sun doesn't shine. They think they know the game. I know it better than they do, and you know it better than you do because you play. So go out and prove them wrong. Go out and have some fun. And I think that's been a good approach, and it seems to work so far.
It has, Giannis. And on top of that, I want to go back to both of you about this because it's really not just about him. I've noticed this in the last match. I'm curious if you noticed it as well. You saw players throwing themselves, you know, into the fray, you know, on free kicks, you know, really just getting after it and closing down very aggressively. And I think that Amorebieta fits that, and I think it also might be infectious, meaning that everyone else is taking on that moniker. Have you noticed that as well? It might be coming from Slavica, but I don't think it's just Amorebieta that has become more aggressive defensively.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. They're playing for the coach. They're playing for the coach. I mean, Scott Parker diving in at his age, you know, doing what he's doing. They're playing for the coach and they're playing for the fans. They're playing hard. And I don't think any of us can complain that since Slavica's come in, the lads haven't played hard. They've worked hard. They've been unlucky in some games not to get a result. But they've put the effort in. They're obviously working hard on the training field. And you can see they're putting the effort in. And listen, one of the biggest things that come out of the transfer deadline is that somehow, some way, in ways we don't know yet, he managed to convince Ross and Musa to stay. So, there must be some sort of synergy and relationship there where they want to play for this guy. They like this guy. He's a player's coach. And the amount of you know, the amount of blockages we made against QPR, I think, was impressive, and it's showing it. And at the end of the day, when we weren't playing, we weren't getting results. All we ask for is a decent effort. If you watched the Villa Liverpool game yesterday, you know, Villa fans must be walking away going, "Why are we bothering? The players don't give it, look like they give a toss." The best player might have been their sub Trevor Sinclair. And, I mean, they got absolutely manhandled. And fans won't complain if you put an effort in. And to be fair, our lads, they've been putting an effort in and putting it where it hurts. And it's been showing in the way we've been playing. And the last couple of games with Derby and the Ha-Ha's, we've managed to get 4 points. I expect that to continue tomorrow night.
Okay, very good. David, what are your thoughts about that? Because I especially noticed it in the last match, you know, obviously the seeing Scott Parker diving, you know, in front of a free kick. But it wasn't just that. It was really all over the pitch, closing down, much more aggressive, great on aerial duels. The stats have really backed that up. What are your thoughts about basically taking on that approach of the manager, the head coach, Slavisa, and being more aggressive, as he has been saying? I'm paraphrasing. He wants them to be more brave going forward, but I think he also wants them to be more brave defensively. Are you seeing that as well?
Well, you know, it's been pretty public knowledge. You know, he said it himself that, you know, we're quite good with the ball, but without the ball, we're pretty soft, and we need toughening up a bit. And that's obviously, you know, signs of what are happening there. And you know, and Parker is the perfect man for this kind of thing, because he's, throughout his time with Fulham, he's always been prepared to get in where it hurts. You know, people have been critical about some of his play, that he's getting too old, maybe can't last 90 minutes. He goes round in circles a little bit. But he's never afraid to get in there where it hurts, and it's a great example to set. I think O'Hara, likewise, was throwing himself in, and obviously Amad Bieta does. Dan Byrne does as well, really. Dan Byrne's not afraid to get in where it hurts. You know, and that's, you know, what people like about him. I know he makes mistakes sometimes, but I don't think anyone can fail to recognise, you know, his effort and commitment. And that's what we need from throughout the team. You know, there are players, I guess, that, you know, aren't as aggressive naturally or don't look as if they want to get stuck in, but it seems to be spreading, you know, slowly through the team, thankfully. Certainly, I think, even, you know, the right-back situation, Jazz Richards never looks that interested, really, to me. I think Fredericks looks like he has a zip about him. He wants to get involved. Whether he's a better player, I don't know, overall, but he does have he has better pace to him, and he certainly does seem to be, you know, that you get the impression of the hustle and bustle is there with him. He's prepared to throw himself in as well where it hurts. And it goes for most of them, I think, really. I mean, you know, maybe Tom Kearney, leave him out of it. He's not one for when he throws himself in, he gets red cards, so probably best he keeps standing up, I think. But for most of them, yeah, no,
good
certainly.
Point, David.
You know, it's pretty obvious that we've been very, you know, soft off the ball, and we've seen other teams come at us. You know, the one credit you give to the Ha-Ha's is the way that someone like, you know, Jamie Mackey was for them. He was constantly running and chasing down lost causes, putting pressure on Lonergan, you know, when he was having to kick the ball out and things. And he showed great effort and commitment. That's what we want to see from our team, because we've seen lots of teams do it against us, you know, close us down. They want it more than we do, but, you know, hopefully no longer. And these things are pretty simple things, that you don't have to be particularly skillful as a footballer for these things. You need to be fit, perhaps. You need to have, you know, good stamina. But, you know, anybody can run and chase the opposition down and throw themselves in front of the ball, really. It's about, you know, getting, rolling your sleeves up and getting stuck in. And that's hopefully where, you know, that's where we've seen an improvement. You know, we've been a lot tighter the last few games, and hopefully this is a, you know, a way to go. And, you know, you saw that there was disappointment from the team as well, a bit, about letting in a late goal. You know, and hopefully they're going to be working harder still to try and, you know, stop these things happening, because, you know, it's been a bit of a bane. Thankfully on Saturday we were so far ahead of them it didn't matter, but, you know, we don't want to be getting back into that either. And so I think things are going the right way. We've been seeing this for a few games now, improvements in little areas, and it's starting to come together in a better picture. And tomorrow's going to be a real test, because this is sort of it's a different scenario. We've had a hoodoo over the Ha-Ha's for a few years, thankfully, but Blackburn's a different matter. Going away to northwest places on a cold Tuesday night, we haven't been particularly good at, if I can recall. So really we're going to have to you know, do something different tomorrow night than what we've been doing on previous away trips up there. And this is, you know, all down to what's he going to do with the team and the tactics and how is he going to set us up. And, you know, Yanis touched on it. And I think I prefer the initial one where you set up your best team and tactics to go and win the game. You don't start changing things to you know, worry about the opposition too much. I think, you know, if you change things to worry about the opposition, you can actually weaken yourself. If you're better as a 3-5-2, which we saw on Saturday, it makes us stronger at the back. It gives us extra man in midfield. It gives us the wing backs for width and pace, and that's the best thing for us. We stick to it. Don't change your formation because you think you can nullify them or something else. Because then you end up having to put Tom Kearney on the wing, or you end up bringing Jazz Richards back in, or you end up doing other terrible things, which, you know, actually they weaken you in trying to match up to the opposition. You maybe weaken yourself. So I think, you know, look at yourself first, worry about yourself first, and only if you need to make changes because of some tactical or injury reason, then think about making these changes. But, you know, you want these fighters out there. And, you know, we talked about Tunnicliffe coming back. We're going to have another fighter if and when he comes into the team as well. So, you know, we are rolling our sleeves up and toughening up, I think, and it can only be for the better.
No, listen, I agree with you, David, and the two words that are coming to mind as we're talking about this is they're tougher and they're showing that commitment that we all want to see. Hands down, that to me is really showing itself. But before I go to Yanis, because I want to get Yanis's thoughts, here's my thoughts on what you just shared. You want to worry about us first and then worry about the opponent. But here's the thing, David. If Slavisa has found a weakness in his opponent and decides, you know what, I'm going to change the formation, I'm going to play a certain player to take advantage of that weakness, is that a bad thing?
No, not really. It just depends on how it impacts you, though. I mean, you know, by making a change, if that was, let's say, that was our strongest lineup on Saturday,
right,
and you have to change that, you know, will we be as strong as well after that change? It's not just what, you know, you're doing for the opposition. As I say, you know, we all think Jazz Richards is rubbish. If he thinks, you know, for some reason Ryan Friedrichs isn't suited there and he'll play Jazz Richards, maybe, you know, there is something about Jazz Richards which is going to cause, you know, problems for the opposition. But I can't see it personally. I know this is probably a silly example, but, you know, it's actually going to weaken us as well. Or, as I say, if it means that Tom Kearney becomes one of two in midfield or has to play right midfield to accommodate this change, there may be, you know, some reason for making the change to exploit something, but you may actually, you know, it's like one of those puzzles, you know, a Rubik's Cube. You can't get the pattern on one side without getting the pattern on the other side. And when you change the pattern on one side, it changes the pattern on the other side as well. And it's all kind of, you know, if you see what I was trying to say, it's all an interlocking puzzle that you can't make a change here without something happening on the other side, active and reactive, you know. So, fine, you know, look to exploit weaknesses in the other team, but I think look to promote the strengths in your own team before looking for weaknesses in the other team.
Okay, very interesting take. Yanis, where do you fall on this? I'm curious your thoughts. You know, I'm not going to lie. I like a manager, a head coach that is playing up against the opponent and trying to exploit the weaknesses of the team. I see where David's going. He wants us to worry more about ourselves. Where do you fall on this?
I think it depends on the team that you're playing against. But I'd be more inclined. I think the better the team, the more you might be inclined to try and stop what they're trying to do. Whereas with a weaker team, you just try and play to your strengths. But again, that's different for every coach. We've got the club that I coach for. We've got a consultant, Rafael Carbajal, who's also the assistant men's coach for our national team. And I went to, I met him a couple of weeks ago for coffee, and we were just talking about coaching and, of course, coaching at the national level. And he said he finds that really coaching at that level is really about two things: managing energies and moving rocks. And I mention that because the moving rocks would intimate, you know, players who are resistant to change. And what has happened here since Slavisa has come in is he walked in with a bunch of players who had fixed mindsets. This was the way they were playing. This was the way they were going to play. They weren't going to change. And in the short space of time that he's been here, he's managed to change the culture of this team from a fixed mindset to a fluid mindset, a growth mindset, where players are willing to change positions, where players are willing to put their bodies on the line. That has been the biggest change. And what I think you'll find is that Slavija will be more comfortable making changes, knowing that effectively his squad has drunk the Kool-Aid. They understand what he's trying to do. They'll understand that formations and lineups will change from week to week. And they'll understand that it's all part of the process. So he, on a personal level, as I said, if it was the stronger teams, I'd look to try and curb. If it was the weaker teams, I'd play my own game. But then even that can change sometimes. The good thing is that we know that Slavija is open to change, and he's always going to change. He's like the moving dartboard. And for me, for a head coach to have that, I never think that's a bad thing.
Okay, very good. Very interesting discussion. David, before we move on and do a preview, what are your thoughts about overall what we've been talking about? I see your point of view. I see you want us to worry about ourselves, but I do like Giannis's point. Regardless, it's about a cultural change, and they're buying in.
I don't think there's a right and a wrong answer to any of this about, you know, playing your best team or looking at your opponents. It's finding the balance. You've got to find, you know, what suits everything. You know, what causes the opponents the most harm or disrupts the opponents the most, but also, you know, gives you your best chance of winning a game. Because of course you can set up a team just to disrupt the opponents, and the best you're ever hoping for is a 0-0 draw. And we've seen that before. Fulham, even Roy Hodgson, a little bit away from
home. He did that. Yeah.
We were set up for 0-0 draws. Really, and you know, there was a chance we could nick something on the break, but you know, it was set up for 0-0 draws. And you know, I guess it's quite easy to criticise that as well. Anyway, I know Roy was a saint for us, but you know, the overall premise. If I said to you every week we're going to set up for a 0-0 draw, you'd hate it, wouldn't you? I think, you know, that's not
yes.
really what, you know, it's not what you want to be doing. So there's so many kind of different ways of looking at this, and what is right
sure.
and what is wrong, and I don't think there is a correct answer in this, as I say. So
okay.
you need a coach who is flexible, obviously, and has the ability to make the changes and see more than one side to the story, of course. You can't ever have just one set of tactics that you apply every game, you know, game in, game out. You have to be able to have a plan B and a plan C, and whether that's something you change proactively during the game because things aren't working the way you planned, or if it's something that you change, you know, between games, so that you go into a different game with a different tactics, either because you think they'll work better, or even if it's just because it's going to disrupt the opposition and throw them off kilter. So yeah, you need to have a bit of both, really. But you know, in the main, I think you should always worry about yourself first. Get your strongest team out there, because at the end of the day, you know, look what we did against QPR. You get yourself three goals like that in a short space of time. They can't come back to that. They really can't. They, you know, it took the wind out of their sails. And, you know, that's the kind of, like we talked about before, the best form of defence is attack. You know,
that's right.
That is your perfect defence. When you've got the ball up the other end and scoring goals, would have been more if it hadn't have been half-time, I'm sure of it. So, you know, sometimes the attacking and the way we were was great. We were strong enough, you know. We were solid anyway. And when we had the opportunity to break them down, we did, and we took it. So, you know, I think play to your strengths, but also, don't, you know, be prepared to be flexible as well if you have to be.
David, I definitely see where you're coming on it. And for me, and then we'll move on and we'll preview the match. If he's going to make a change, I'm glad that he is flexible, because that's what I wanted. I thought Kit was too rigid, and some of our managers before even Roy Hodgson, you know, again, Roy had his own style. Roy would set us up ways that would drive me crazy. But the managers that we've had, I'm talking about Yoel and some of these other managers, you know, I thought got outfoxed by the other manager. I don't feel like we're going to be seeing that as much with Slavija. But here's the thing. If he's going to make changes, David, there has to be a purpose behind it. Everything has to have a purpose. As long as there's a purpose behind it, I don't have a problem with making changes. But I do see where you're coming from. You want us to put out our strongest side and worry about ourselves. So there really is no right or wrong. We just want Fulham to find ways to win, and that's kind of where I'm going on all this. All right, guys, let's now move on and let's preview this match. I'll just share some information with you from WhoScored.com on Blackburn to set this thing up. And then I also have some stats after I give you some information of a stats breakdown comparing Fulham and Blackburn that I think both of you are going to find interesting. But let's start with just some basic information. Let's see. Blackburn are currently 19th. They have 6 wins, 13 draws, 10 losses. They've scored 25. They've given up 27. They're on a minus 2 goal differential, and they're on 31 points. Fulham have 7 wins, 11 draws, 12 losses. We've scored 47. We've given up 50, and we're on a minus 3 goal differential. We're on 32 points, and we sit 18th. So we are just one spot in between both of us here. Now, their leading goal scorer was Jordan Rhodes with 10, but he is now gone. So they go from a guy who scored 10 goals to two players that have scored 2 goals. You got midfielder Craig Conway with 2 goals and center back Grant Hanley that has 2 goals. So think about that when you look at Blackburn. They've lost a considerable player in Jordan Rhodes. If you look in assists, Craig Conway leads there as well with 5. And now I'm going to give you some information on their strengths. Very strong at attacking set pieces, defending set pieces very strong, and aerial duels, they're very strong. They're also strong in protecting their lead. Weakness, defending against through ball attacks. They're very weak in finishing scoring chances, stopping opponents from creating chances, defending against attacks down the wings. Their style, attempt crosses often, attack through the middle, attacking down the left, and play with width. All right, Giannis, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts about what I just shared about Blackburn heading into this match?
Well, it all sounds very positive, but the record doesn't lie. I actually feel very sorry for Paul Lambert. He's one of the best managers in the division. And, I mean, let's be honest, Blackburn Rovers have been a train wreck the last 3 or 4 years with the Venky's chickens and all the good players that they've sold and the relegation from the Premier League. And then you go and get rid of Jordan Rhodes. I mean, you look at their lineup, and this, I mean, where is the danger going to come from? Yordi Gomez is about the only one that worries me. The thing though, as David said earlier, going to the Northwest in a midweek on a rainy Tuesday, Wednesday night is never an easy thing. So it's going to be a difficult game. They lost 2-0 to Hull City on Saturday, and it sounds like they played okay, but I just don't know where the goals are going to come from. And they're struggling. And Paul Lambert, at the end of the season, I'd get the hell out of there. Because, I mean, how are you supposed to be a progressive club? And they're very loyal fans up there at Ewood Park. How are you going to be a progressive club if you insist on selling your best player? So if the description, your description actually came to fruition, then they'd be a top 3 or 4 side. But they're not. And they've not won a game in 9. So they're really struggling, and because they lost to Hull on Saturday, this is a big game for them.
It's a huge game for them, and up front, just so you know, players to look out for would be Tony Watt and Danny Graham, but he's going to be facing a fitness test before the match, just so you know, along with Grant Hanley, center back. Those two players, according to the Lancashire Telegraph, will be dealing with some late fitness tests, so we'll see if they can play. David, before I give you the stats breakdown, what are your thoughts about what I shared about Blackburn?
Well, I mean, they've suffered a big loss losing Jordan Rhodes, of course. He's been their big threat. So, you know, they're going to find goals harder to come by now, obviously, without him there. Also, you know, I was very interested to hear that they were very weak against through balls. And I was just thinking about, you know, 2 of our goals came from through balls, basically, on Saturday.
That's right.
And if we can recreate the same kind of play in positions as we did then. Of course, Tom Kearney would know them pretty well as well up there, I think. But, you know, maybe we can do the same sort of thing. So it gives me the thought that, again, we want to be strong in the midfield. And if we do play the 5 in midfield, I think that could be a great way forward for us, because those, you know, someone doing the holding and 2 other players running a bit more forward to support Musa and Ross could be really useful. So I think, you know, it's not a game where we want to be changing too much. I think we just want to build on what we did on Saturday and go out and try and do the same again, because that's where we can really hit them where it hurts.
Okay, very good, David. All right, guys, I put together a stats breakdown comparing both of the teams. Again, this is from WhoScored.com, which I use often, and I think you'll find this interesting. I'll be curious what you get out of this stats breakdown. And we'll start with shots per game. Fulham are currently 16th in the league with 12.3. Blackburn are 14th at 12.6. That's shots per game possession. Fulham are currently third at 53.1%. And Blackburn are 13th with 49.6%. Passing success, Fulham are currently 6th at 76.2, and Blackburn are 19th at 69.4. Aerials won. Fulham are currently 13th at 21.2. Blackburn are 2nd in the league at 27.8. Crosses per game, Fulham are 18th. They're 21st with 18 per game. Crosses per game for Blackburn, they are 6th with 23 per game. Long balls. Fulham are currently 10th with 85 long balls per game. Blackburn are 14th with 84 long balls per game. And finally, short passes. Fulham are currently 3rd in the league with 398 short passes per game. And Blackburn are 16th with 314 short passes per game. All right, Giannis, what do you make of that stats breakdown between the two clubs? What sticks out to you?
Contrast the styles, short passes versus long passes. And it surprises me a little bit because when Paul Lambert was at Carrow Road with Norwich, they were a pretty good passing side, pretty good possession side. But Blackburn are a big team, big physical team. So, I mean, those stats don't surprise me. The short passing for us doesn't surprise me because we like to play it on the deck. I think the thing now, as we saw, especially with the first goal on Saturday, that the fantastic through ball from Kearney through to Mack, is that we've got to look to play those penetrating passes through the channels. And if we can get that going, we're going to be just fine. I think it's okay to pass the ball for passing's sake, playing your tippy-tappy stuff, but you still have to be penetrative at some point. And I think that's the way we're going to unlock them tomorrow night. And remembering, of course, that we're playing against a team that's going to be very nervous in front of fans who are very nervous at the moment as well.
Okay, very good. And David, over to you. What stands out to you from the stats?
Well, as Giannis has been saying, really, it's you know, I think some of our stats are a little bit flattering when it comes to passing because we've done a lot of tippy-tappy passing over the season, you know, backwards and sideways, easy stuff, but not enough of the penetrating stuff. You know, and we saw on Saturday how devastating that can be when you do play the devastating balls. You know, we've far too long we've been getting into the final third and then, you know, almost getting each other's way at times. And that was, as I was sort of saying, with playing the inverted wide men who like to come inside, you end up with four or five players all in the same kind of area. And there doesn't give you the options for different passes because all you can do is just little taps among each other and while the opposition just get behind you. But with the, you know, the way we played on Saturday, we have options to put it out wide. We have forwards running through the channels. You know, we have central midfielders coming forwards as well. And I think, you know, that's where we can turn this possession and passing into meaningful passing. That has really been the downside for me, that we haven't had enough of those meaningful passes. But, you know, clearly we are quite a comfortable team on the ball, as we've seen. You know, our possession has been testament to that. We like to keep hold of the ball. It's just, say, using it. And I think we saw signs that we can use the ball better on Saturday, and that's where we need to be going with it. So, you know, I think it's work on that, build on your strength, and, you know, keep going with that, really, because, you know, when we get going like that, the triangles and everything else, Kearney can be devastating, as can McCormack with passes, and you know, to great effect. So keep up the passing game. I mean, no one wants to see us really going into anything apart from that, long balls or anything else. It's not our style. We've tried long balls. It looks horrible. but, you know.
I agree, David.
We do have strength in depth in most areas, but not up front. Up front, our only other option is to put Matt Smith on, really, which would probably mean a change of style. I love Matt Smith, but hasn't happened for him much this year, really. And, you know, I think the longer Slavish is in the job, the less our style is, becoming suitable for Matt Smith, really. We have to really change things around for him. So, you know, keep working on the one or the two forwards on the ground. And as I say, with the passing, and hopefully if we can keep the wing backs and keep the width, then we have options for putting balls in from wide positions as well as through balls from from the midfielders. So it's all about that, just to keep developing the passing and keeping the possession like we have been doing and using the ball wisely and better.
Okay, very good there, David. I liked that explanation you just gave. All right, Yanis, I'm going to go back to you. I'm going to read something to you because I'm not 100% sure what Paul Lambert is going to do against Fulham, but I do want to mention this. Again, according to WhoScored.com, they have them down as playing off in a 4-4-1-1, but I was just reading this article from the Lancashire Telegraph, and it basically talks about them playing the diamond. So I'm just going to read this because this has to do with Ben Marshall, who's a right back. And this is from the article that says, three things we learned from Blackburn Rovers' defeat to Hull City. This is Ben Marshall. One of the dangers of operating a midfield diamond is it can leave you exposed in the wide areas, and Hull certainly exploited the space on the flanks. But it should not be forgotten, the new system worked well against Middlesbrough, and it is one which can continue to bring the best out of Ben Marshall. Yanis, I want to get your thoughts on this. You know, again, we've seen Fulham play the diamond. If Paul Lambert plays the diamond, what do you think Slavisa would do to counteract that?
I'm not sure he's going to do anything. I mean, the diamond might work, but if you're going to change the system or the style of play, it has to be based on the pretext that forming the diamond is going to be act as more of a threat. And I just don't see enough in their midfield and strike force to say that that's necessarily going to work. If you had Jordan Rhodes up there, I could understand that. That makes sense. But without Jordan Rhodes in the lineup, you really don't have. Danny Graham might be the closest person you've got to a bona fide striker. So
right.
That notion of the player playing in front of the two in the middle as part of the diamond, I'm not so sure it's going to work because it's not something that as a coach I'd look at and say, okay, we've got to adjust. I think Slavisa should just look at what he had on Saturday. We'll just play that way as opposed to adjust it. As I said earlier, if you're playing against weaker teams, play your formation, play your style. And Blackburn are not one of the stronger teams, and they're in a real free fall. This to me, smacks a little bit of a desperation move. I'm not so sure that I'd endorse it, so I don't necessarily think there should be much to worry about.
Okay, very good. So, David, this goes to pretty much what you're saying. Worry about yourself in this particular matchup because based on what Yanis was saying, this is put out your best team, and it sounds like to me that you're hoping that Slavisa plays a 3-5-2 again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the downside with the diamond is we found ourselves when we played it a lot under Kit, was you have no width at all because you have, you know, two midfielders, sort of left and right centre midfielders. You know, one sitting behind them and one in front, but no wide ones, and you're relying completely from the fullbacks for any width. That's really your only real option there. So if we're playing the 3-5-2, where our fullbacks are already pushed up, we're kind of, you know, we're keeping them pinned to their own half almost. If you can, you know, see what I mean there. So we have got the width because we're not relying on our fullbacks defensively as much as they are. They're relying on their fullbacks as part of a back four. Our wing backs are part of a midfield three or a midfield five, and also a defensive five. We still have the three defenders, and then Scott Parker sitting in front of those three central defenders as a defensive four in a way. So our fullbacks, our wing backs, are much more dangerous potentially than theirs are. So you would imagine that on the flanks we can win that battle. But when you come to the midfield, of course, they do have four in central midfield technically, although one is advanced and one is deep and the other two are wide. We still have three central midfielders there as well, one of who is Scott Parker. Scott Parker's job would be, I guess, to nullify the cam, where the other two central midfielders, of course, will be looking at their two central midfielders. And then it's just a match of, I suppose, their cam, really, and their back four who will have Dembele and McCormack to worry about. But of course, you know, it's really going to be if we can play that system and if we can play it effectively as we did. because it's a different environment going somewhere we haven't got our fans there. You know, it's a difficult place to go. You know, can you recreate the same kind of atmosphere? This is the thing. You know, you've got to play your best team, but you have your best team have to be able to be on their best form as well, or in reasonable form. You know, we saw last time. You know, we went away to Bristol City and we played the 3-5-2, and we were fantastic. You know, we 4-0 up at half time or whatever. And then we tried it. I think Kit tried it again at Burnley on a cold Tuesday night. And it, for whatever reason, it didn't work for him, and he changed to a 4-4-2, and we were better. So this is where Slavisa has to be smart and think, you know, look at who's evolving. I don't see anyone particularly dangerous at Blackburn at the moment, not really. So I don't think we need to worry about them massively. But, you know, we have to also be aware of it's not the same situation as Saturday. He obviously saw a weakness with QPR, and, you know, and their weakness for me was that once we got our noses in front, they crumbled, really. You know, it was a pretty tight, cagey match for 30 minutes, but we got our noses in front and they crumbled. And really, you know, the match was finished at half-time, as Yanis also said. So it's, you know, how we go about it tomorrow night. I think the 3-5-2 can easily beat their system because, you know, we can be strong in midfield. We're strong throughout the spine of the team, as I say. It's a sleight of hand. You get five in defence and you get five in midfield, sort of, and two up front. So you're almost as if you have 12 players at times. You know, you've got that extra player. It's a sleight of hand. The extra central defender, three through the middle. The extra central midfielder, three through the middle again there. And yet the wing-backs, you still have width as well. So you get a bit of everything with it. And that's why I think it's a superior system, that if we can play it and use it well, I think we need to look at that first before we worry about the opposition, especially weaker teams.
Very interesting take there, David. And you don't have to sell me on the 3-5-2. I'm all in, but Slavisa is someone that I just have this feeling that we'll be changing it up, and I hope that he goes with the 3-5-2 this week. All right, guys, we only have less than 3 minutes. The show has flown by, so I really don't have time that much to really go into lineups. David, do you see any possible changes in the lineups quickly? Okay, David had the drop-off. How about you, Yanis? Do you see any differences in the potential lineup?
I think just one. I think Garbutt will come in for LVC. And, I mean, they're kept fairly cagey about the injury, so, you know, any knocks from Saturday. But providing we're healthy, I think that's going to be probably the one change for us.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, we're going to go right to predictions. David, I'm going to go to you first. Give me your prediction for the match tomorrow.
I actually think that it's going to be a bit harder than it was on Saturday, and I think we're going to come out with a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Okay, not a problem. Yanis, how about you?
I think we're going to nick this one. I think we're going to win it 1-0.
Okay, very good. So Yanis is going 1-0. David's going 1-1. Guys, I'm going to go 2-1. I'm going to say Fulham are going to win. And David, Ross McCormack is going to score both goals. Just to annoy you, I'm going to say Ross McCormack is going to score twice.
You just put every week you put the mockers on him.
Okay. Yes, I know, David. The one thing I want to mention that I actually did put this on the put a poll on the Cottage Talk Twitter page. 119 votes, 71% said victory, 20% said draw, and only 9% said loss. So the Fulham supporters are pretty high on this, David.
No, they are. I was one of the 20% that said draw. I didn't want to get too carried away. And I don't want to get too carried away. We won a game against QPR earlier in the season convincingly, and then we went out at home against Wolves and we were shit. And, let's go and see if we can go out and do it twice in a row, which we haven't done all season, literally. So let's keep our feet on the ground. And, you know, in some ways, a point would be a good result, because if we could then come and smash Charlton on Saturday, you'd say it'd be a good week overall still.
I agree. Yanis, we got to go. Thank you so much, my friend, but we really have to shut the show down. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Russ. Always a pleasure.
Okay. For David and Yanis, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Thanks, David. Bye, Russ.
Cheers, Russ.
Bye, Yanis.
I'm gonna go to the hospital. come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust.